Presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective Extra Innings right here presented by Next Level Training Center. I want to thank Trent Britt and all his fine staff. We'll be talking later on the show. Put on a heck of a clinic today, this morning, for our 8 and 9 year old boys. My son Alexander participated, and I give a shout out to Trent and Gaynell and everybody there at Next Level Training Center. Guys, I understand that Bryant Packer was there and Alec Burleson. So appreciate them obviously helping, you know, my son. Hopefully, the coach, we'll talk to coach in just a second, but hopefully we'll have a future Pirate, Riley Rosenbaum and Alexander Richmond playing on the same team. That'd be pretty cool. Right, Bubba?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, huge week for the Pirates, some sweep of App State this weekend, six runs all weekend for the Mountaineers, and a tremendous job by the Pirate pitching, particularly the bullpen, and then obviously an excellent start today by Carson Wisenhunt, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. But Pirates responded just like you would expect them to following the 12-inning loss to ODU on Wednesday.
No doubt with us right now. Very excited to have Dr. Gary Overton, the all-time winningest coach, longtime analyst. He does it all at ECU. He turns on the lights and off the lights. And, Coach, we're so glad to have you on tonight. It means a lot to us.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. And I always look forward to being with you guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Coach, you know, anytime, you know, I know fans want to win every single game, but you and I were talking about disappointing loss Wednesday night overall for the midweek game. However, if you look at the stats, anytime you can go 3-1 the last couple weeks, it's that's means regional time, right? You're going to go to a regional.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. That certainly leads to postseason play and deep into postseason play. But 3-1 weeks are special for any coach. I'm sure they would agree. Although the loss last Wednesday night to Old Dominion was a little bit of a sting to the Pirates. The Pirates have played so well all year to that point. I'm not saying that they were due. No coach would like to think that their club is ever due for a letdown or a poor performance. But they had just played so well in all phases of the game. As you alluded to, the bullpen had been stellar to that point, and the offense at times sporadically had a different player step to the plate or step up in key situations. And then when Old Dominion came in and Pirates got locked into a low scoring late game and eventually took the lead, but instead of carrying that lead through, kind of sit on it because it had been to their advantage through those first 5 to 6 games. And then Old Dominion said no. And in taking the game into the extra innings, as we all know, anything can happen. And the 3-run home run, of course, was the decisive blow in the 12th inning by ODU. But the Pirates had played so well to that point. And nothing to be ashamed of losing to a club like that, because they were a very good offensive club. And again, rebounding to take 3 against App State. Pirates not missing a beat now.
Yeah, what I like most about that game, Coach, even though we lost, getting down by 3 runs in extra innings, you're worn out, and then we still don't give up. We battle back to cut it to 1 run, and just, you know, they end up getting the 3rd out. But I love to see the fight after we were down 3 runs in the 12th.
Yeah, really good point. And not just the 2 runs that we scored to get back in the game, but had the winning run even on first base. I think we had first and second when the game ended. So we reached or we did the hard parts of that inning to get back into the game, and then we're right there. It just didn't fall our way at the end, even after the 3-run home run from Old Dominion. So there was a lot to be proud of, even though the Pirates didn't play very well. It was the first game all year that we didn't see really good base running. We actually saw some miscues on the bases that hurt. And The Pirates didn't swing the bats well early in the game. As you mentioned, Kyle, later in the game, especially in the 12th inning, the bats came alive and the offense seemed to show its mettle. But at the same time, there was a lot. There was a lot that even in a loss that was good in that game.
Yep.
A couple of things that really stood out about that game, obviously, it was a 12-inning ball game, but 4 hours and 42 minutes and 18 pitchers used between the two teams. I think eight for Old Dominion, I believe 10 for the Pirates. But like you referenced, Coach O, slow start offensively, but the Pirates ended up out-hitting the Monarchs 12-8. But three of those eight hits for ODU left the yard.
Yeah, and that's the strength of their game. They will play long ball with you, and they knew coming in that their bullpen was no match at all for ECU's, which was why such a detriment on the long home run in the 12th inning. But because the tables turned, the advantage went from ECU to ODU quickly, and it's just that way when a good team and maybe not a team that's I think even Chris Finwood, a friend of mine, would say he's the head coach of Old Dominion. And he would say that we don't have the personnel that an ECU does, but to escape Greenville with a win, they were extremely excited that night.
No question about it, Coach. One question that I had for you, and you're probably the historian of ECU baseball. Do you know the record for the most innings, or maybe you can tell us the most you've ever coached in? But I know you and Corey were talking about that on the game Wednesday night. That's one of the longest games I've ever seen as a Pirates fan. And
yeah, it certainly was time wise. And 12 innings, yeah, you rarely see them longer than that. Dave, I think the longest game I coached in was 12 innings.
Wow.
But I'm sorry.
I was expecting a bigger number.
No, no, but I want to say that I'll have to go back and look at the record book. But I think the SIDs once told me that the longest ECU game was a 17 inning game.
Oh, and, my God.
But the longest game that I can recall coaching in was 12 innings. Although time wise, the game Wednesday night was as long as you'll see. Yeah, just under 5 hours.
Now, Coach O, one of the longest games time-wise, I believe it was just 9 innings, but there was a game against George Mason. I want to say, I'm trying to remember, it was mid to late 90s, I think late 90s, one of your last couple years at the helm, and it was the same weekend as the Purple Gold Pigskin Pig Out, and it was a 27-17 ball game.
I remember the game well. Balls were flying, Dave and I were just chatting off the air earlier that in the 90s, of course, the bats were juiced a little more than they are now. But at the same time, there was a lot of carry, a little wind. It was not that windy, but there was a lot of carry that day where some high fly balls were leaving the yard. But, yeah, that was that was a game not to be forgotten. And no team was out of that game at any point. But I remember it very well. And the number of home runs were astounding in it.
No doubt. And one of the things I've always heard as a player and a coach is that you learn more from a loss than you do from a win. Do you subscribe to that as far as finding out more about your team or about yourself?
No question. And I'll add to that. You remember the losses, the scores, the innings, the mistakes that a coach would have, could have, should have made. We could go on and on. You forget some of the wins. Not that they weren't good. It's just that a lot of those are forgotten. You never forget the losses. Those are remembered. But you learn more from it. You remember, as I said, what could have or should have been done, but how you would change concepts, different strategies and tactics, and how would you implement players differently. And I'm sure that Cliff Godwin would agree with that. I'm sure that the way he uses pitchers or even pinch runners at times can be predicated on certain situations that if it comes back to bite you, hey, should have done something different. Yeah, you learn quite a bit from losses.
Coach O, taking a look at the opening game of the App State Series, As I put a graphic here on the screen for our viewers, you had Connor Norby, obviously Francisco Makarevich with two hits apiece. But the thing I wanted to hone in on right away is Tyler Smith and then also Tuthill from App State. Both of them, you know, really struggled with their command earlier in the games, but they couldn't capitalize. Neither team could.
Yeah, and Bubba, you bring out a good point. Tuthill, a really good pitcher in his own right. He really mirrors a pitcher on the ECU staff in C.J. Mayhew. They're very similar. They rush the ball to the plate, so to speak. They're quick with their actions. And so, therefore, it appears they're throwing the ball really a bit harder than they are. Each of those two pitchers are going to run the baseball up there at 88, 89. Tuthill was doing that. Now, the difference between the two is that Tuthill was, as you said, great word. He was showing no command. He even had control issues due to that lack of command, and it kept him in trouble. And in so doing, the Pirates certainly capitalized on that. It took the middle innings for the Pirates to get to him, but at the same time, it was there. Tyler Smith kind of reverted back to his earlier days at ECU. He was cruising. He was pitching well. He was in control of the game. And I really thought he was hitting spots. And I thought he was hitting spots as well as he could. But when he lost it in like the – I think it was the fourth inning when he lost it, he really lost it. And it was to the point where he had a hard time within the inning regaining the command or the control that it had gotten him to the point where he was. And once that occurred, Coach Godwin had to go get him. He had no choice. He had to go.
Coach, I had a question along those lines as far as he's concerned with Tyler Smith. Is that something that's a mental thing? I mean, you always hear about that it's 90%, you know, with the old saying about 90% mental, 10% skill. Is that he has such great, I mean, great stuff as a pitcher, the experience. He's a guy that you would love to have on the mound. But is that the mental part of the game that maybe is playing with him right now?
Well, really good question there, Dave. And Tyler does have really good stuff. Not taking anything away from him. He when he's on, he's really on and very effective and has lost very few times as an ECU Pirate. But I think in his case, it's not mental, not at all. But when he starts losing command, where the mentality sets in is trying to regain it. And sometimes a player overdoes or overthinks, overreacts, tries to overcompensate for whatever he's doing. And things like that physically can be the reason for not recouping or regaining command of the game. I have seen pitchers that it was mental. There's no question about that. In other words, they started feeling a losing mentality like, oh, no, I've lost it. I don't know what to do now. I don't know where to go or how to get it back. That's not the case with Tyler. He knows. He can. It's just sometimes either he's overcompensating or he's maybe attacking in the wrong mode to try to regain that form. But in some cases, yes, it is a mental thing, but not in Tyler's.
Coach, how was it Friday night? I don't think we had our full 1,200 that are allowed to come out Friday night, but how was it having a true amount of fans back in the stands this weekend?
Well, I think first and foremost, the players would tell you it was a refreshing feeling, very much so, to play in front of a crowd that was into the game. They were there because they're ECU Pirate fans and they love Pirate baseball. Now that in itself just warms a player to the degree that it actually elevates his game. So to see almost 1,000 fans or maybe even a little more in the stadium, we would all like to see 3,500 to 5,000. I don't think any of us would not like to see that.
No.
But just the fact that the stands were there and athletic administration did a great job of utilizing the jungle on both sides. There's a student section in right field, and then the loyal Pirate supporters that are normally in the jungle and left were all out there in force. So it created an atmosphere that that was fun to watch.
Friday night, the Bats got going, arguably the best offensive performance of the year so far. Was that approach or just lack of depth in App State's pitching rotation or their bullpen, I should say?
Kyle, every Pirate player has really contributed in some way or another offensively throughout the year. It's been, with the exception of Connor Norby, it's been like a different guy each day. Moreland was showing us power early. Worrell has certainly hit a lot of balls hard, but right at people. And yes, he was in a bit of a slump a little bit earlier, but starting to come out of that. He's had some extra base hits of late, and one in the 12th inning of that Old Dominion game you just referred to. But I think the offense is that each offensive player in the lineup is very capable, and almost every player possesses some form of power. With that being said, again, Norby has been extremely consistent in being a catalyst, but outside of him, it's a different player. It seems to be the catalyst each day. Friday night, it just appeared that three guys rose up. Cadell has been supplying power. He's been a part of it. Again, I mentioned Norby and Francisco one day, who now is on an 11-game hitting streak. So it's just a different guy in addition to Norby, who is being the catalyst or creating that offensive punch, so to speak.
As by the way, and Bubba, I know you got something to say. I was gonna, we have a Connor Norby's been our PGX player of the game, coach 2 weeks in a row. Will he make it three? I'm giving you a little bit of a tease. And
there you go.
He is. Yeah, he put it up there for me. I was trying to tease it, but third week in a row.
This is just the second week that he had been named the PGX player of the week. But Connor Norby, 10 for 18, two home runs, two doubles, six runs driven in, and three walks. So reaching base in 13 out of 21 plate appearances. Just unbelievable success at the plate and batting over 500 right now through 11 ball games, 9-2.
Yeah, and he is our PGX Gloves Player of the Week. Go to pgxgloves.com and get yourself some custom gloves. They got batting gloves, golf gloves. They got swag. pgxgloves.com. And putting code ECU, save yourself 25% at checkout.
In fact, Alexander had his clinic today at Next Level, and he was telling me how much I surprised him. I put him in his baseball bag today. I didn't tell him about it. And when he reached in the bag, he saw those new gloves from pgxgloves.com. I got him two pair of them. He was so excited, and to be there with Trent Brett and everybody at Next Level, great stuff there. Speaking of great stuff, Bubba, I know you had some points you wanted to make.
Yeah, a couple other notes about the pitching in game one of the App State series. And you had Logish, what a job he did. Six strikeouts, no walks, and was just lights out in relief as the Pirates were pulling away in the middle innings of that game right before the Pirates put up a sixth spot in the seventh, I believe it was. And then you also had, I think, Coach O, you may have already alluded to this, and you had 14 strikeouts for Pirate pitching as opposed to just six for App State. So over half of App State's outs were strikeouts.
Yeah, and the Logish, really interested to see him pitch six hitters, struck out all six, and Coach Godwin said the only reason he went back out after the first inning was that he went through that first inning so quickly with the three strikeouts. He said he had to run him back out there and then three more. But I think the thing to pay attention to on Logish, he was creating a buzz in the stadium. He was beating bats with fastballs, never had to use his breaking ball, and then late, I think it may have been the fifth or even possibly the sixth hitter that he struck out, he used a breaking ball on a two-strike count, and the guy was frozen. And the crowd, if the crowd was not in it, it became in it after those or that excursion, because Pirate baseball fans had a treat to watch, and it just excited the element.
Coach, we move on to I guess we're done with Friday. You guys ready to move on to Saturday?
Absolutely.
We move on to Saturday, and it's a close ball game for the most part. Well played game. Pirates got off to a slow start, but kind of took control of the game in the middle innings. And what'd you think of the performance overall yesterday, Coach?
Okay, this was the game that Pirate coaches wanted to see, because this was a microcosm of the game Wednesday night against Old Dominion. Very similar. Pirates fell behind, and then in the middle innings took the lead. Now with the one-run lead, instead of this time being passive and not putting the foot on the pedal, this particular game, even Coach Godwin played for one run here, there, but the Pirates padded in different ways. They did it with a home run. They did it with a couple of base running gems. And as the game went on, it was like a finish. As coaches like to say, you have to finish, but Pirates did it the ECU baseball way. And I think Cliff used that term quite a bit post game here. And it was what he wanted to see, or having seen against Old Dominion. He saw it in this game.
It was exciting. Couple back-to-back home runs, and then the and then the base running score where he gets cut down in between first and second, but it lets the guy get home from third. It was fun to watch.
Do you remember the unusual play that occurred in that game? Yeah, we had a run down between first and second, which allowed a runner to score, and going back into first base, the runner was ruled safe, and then on an overthrow. Well, actually, on the overthrow to third base, a run came in to score. The challenge was made on the tag running, coming back into first base, and it was overturned and out, but it was only the second out of the inning, so the scored run stood.
Absolutely. And that's what I was – I was wondering if there was any way that the run wouldn't stand while they were reviewing the play, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out any way it wouldn't, but – you never know. I don't trust replay officials in any sport.
That's an old adage, Coach, that you say, be careful what you wish for. Everybody before we had replay wanted it, and then when you get it, then you're like, oh, I don't know. I wanted to ask this really fast as a coach to coach before replay. Do you think it messes up the flow of the game? I mean, we always talk about baseball. Maybe we're talking about a game, with Wednesday night taking 4 hours and 50-some minutes. Do you think it messes up the game at all?
Dave, when it first came out, I think there may have been a little flaw there, just briefly. But as teams and baseball personnel have become used to it, no, it doesn't. It's almost like it's a part of the game. And more important, in everyone's mind that's involved in the game, they want to make sure the call is right. And in the NCAA rule book, there's a section that says getting the call right. Whether the umpires need to huddle, whether we need to go to replay, the reference is get the call right.
And they did. They got the call right. He was out at first, and the run stood. So all's well that ends well. Coach, I got an interesting question for you about Saturday's game. I turned on the game on ESPN+, and I look out there on the field. Bubba probably knows where I'm going with this. And I see Appalachian State's uniforms. I have never seen uniforms quite like that. They look like they should have been mechanics at Jiffy Lube or something. I've never seen such dark gray. Those pants to me were just dreadful. What is the not asking you to pick on App? What is the worst uniform you've seen a baseball team wear?
Well, I think years ago, I know someone came in. It was a Northern school. I can't remember where, and I can't remember the exact dates or the years. But I remember a team with horizontal stripes on their uniform. And, yeah, and it didn't look good. It was I didn't know what to make of it. It certainly wasn't baseball. But I think that was you said the ugliest. That was the ugliest I had ever seen.
And to me, the ugliest uniforms maybe go major leagues. I would say the Padres late 70s or Astros maybe 80s Astros uniforms. Not to get off on a tangent with the ugly uniforms, but those were probably my least favorite guys.
Well, I always kind of like those Astros uniforms. I know the ones you're talking about. For some reason, there's something about them I like.
Hey, I was going to say, Dave, you and I think are old school, but I think of uniforms as being off-white or gray or a simple color on the uniform. But multicolor. I'm sure there are a lot of institutions or a lot of programs, a lot of clubs in the big leagues who have tried almost everything, and to each his own, I guess.
Before we talk about game three, a couple points about game two. You've heard Cliff Godwin talk on numerous occasions as far as Ben Newton's bat being much improved from what it was in last year's shortened season. Ben Newton provided the first of those back-to-back home runs in the fifth, and he also had an opposite field single.
Yeah, and the big element with Ben Newton is that I think Cliff Godwin at this point is trying to instill in him that, hey, you're a better player than even you think you are. There's a lot of ability there, and we saw that in the home run yesterday with the long home run. That ball came off his bat hot. It was a fastball up, elevated in the zone, but that ball went a long way into the beyond the right field jungle. He did something more impressive, I thought, in that game. On a play at second base, which was actually replayed and not overturned as well, but from his knees, he threw a runner and had transfer. When I say transfer, I mean moving his weight from the back of his body to his front. And he's on his knees, so there's obviously no stride. But with that transfer, he still threw a rocket to second base. Throw was up just a little. If not, runner would have been out. And I thought that was extremely impressive. It was a bit athletic, but it also showcased his arm strength. And when you talk about a catcher with arm strength and a catcher that hit a long home run in the same game, young man has a lot of ability. And that's what Cliff Godwin is bringing out in him right now, is that I think I used this on the air yesterday, is that you're not our backup catcher. You're 1B. There's 1A and 1B. You can be the 1B.
I'm glad you brought that up. And also, what about the Seth Goodell? He's been both catchers have been – sometimes it's such a cliche in baseball as far as catchers. You don't think of them as the offensive power, but it's nice to have two guys that are not only great defensively, coach, but they've got great bats as well.
Yeah, and Dave, Seth Goodell is a prime example. This is almost perfect for what a coach tries to explain when it comes to power on a team. You can give up a little average for power. Studies show that a guy that hits 280 with some power is more effective than a guy with absolutely no power that hits 300. When Seth Goodell has now 5 home runs. And here's the thing about his power, and he brings it to a team that at time needs it, as any club does. But the thing about his power is that he gets it when the Pirates need it most. He doesn't hit his home runs when they're up 12-0 or down 7-1. His home runs come when the Pirates are down by one or when the Pirates are up by one. And he's a very clutch player. So what I say about Seth Goodell offensively is don't look at his average. And it is good. He does have a good average. But don't look at that. Look at his power production and when that power occurs, because he's a catalyst for this club in its own right. Now, defensively, he's a better catcher than he's been in the last couple of years. Cliff Godwin told us that. He said through the fall, he made major improvements, major strides. We're seeing that. And I'm seeing it foremost with his hands. I'm seeing it in receiving pitches. He's framing pitches better than I think he has the last couple of years. And, of course, guys like Kuchmaner love that. Guys like Tyler Smith love that because he takes possible balls and doesn't bring them back into the zone. He freezes those balls in the zone. Yeah, good hands, soft hands, and I think he's always been a good blocker, but same time, he's a good receiver as well.
We talk about the tear that Connor Norby has been on being the PGX Player of the Week. How about Gavin Williams coming in relief? The Pirates were trailing 2-0 through 4 innings. Gavin comes in, puts up 4 zeros, does not allow a hit. I think 3 Ks, 2 walks. Terrific outing for Gavin. And very unusual that you see a power pitcher like Gavin, like Coach Godwin noted in the post game, 45 pitches, so averaging 11 pitches per inning for a guy that does what Gavin does, and that's very efficient.
Well, first of all, guys, I commend you on your selections. I think Gavin Williams certainly deserves to be pitcher of the week. Now Logish was a strong consideration, I'm sure. And again, he created a buzz in the Pirate faithful, but Gavin Williams was the guy. What I saw in him yesterday was not just a guy who did not give up a ball hit hard at all. I didn't see just a power pitcher who was throwing 96, 97. But what I saw was a guy who was effortless yesterday. He came out in a groove. He kept the rhythm from start to finish. He was very smooth in his delivery. And he really looked yesterday like a professional pitcher. What that means is his upside is even higher. We know it's high because of his body type, his style, his height, and his build. But at the same time, I think that fluid arm angle or his arm action just and being very smooth with it, I think just made him it kind of lights up to see how high that young man can go.
Coach, one question I had is I know Cliff has always done a nice job. I know you did as well in putting the player's future first. When you have the depth, as we were talking pre-show right before we came on, the depth we have of pitching, it's nice not to have to put that kid in pressure, meaning that, you know, here he is coming back and he's not fully 100% and you put him in the starting rotation. But that leads me to my question. How long do you think it'll be before Gavin's maybe our Friday night pitcher? You think is that?
Great question, Dave. And I think yesterday showed us by Cliff letting him go four innings. Now, again, he was very good yesterday. But by letting him go four innings, he's allowing not just the pitch count, but the number of innings worked start to slowly rise. I don't think we're far from seeing him in the rotation. I really don't. With maybe a limit of five or possibly six innings. But Cliff is working him to that point on a gradual basis. And that's what a coach has to do. And I think this progress was shown yesterday.
Coach O, we talked about slow starts offensively in at least two or three of those first three games of the week. But then today, the Pirates jumped on App State. Obviously, App State trying to stave off the sweep. But we get one in the first, two in the second, three in the third. And as Seth Cadell really did a tremendous job today, driving in five runs.
Well, you go back to Seth, and we talked about his meaningful hits or long balls. And today was one of those. As the Pirates were not putting the game away, but were taking control of the game, he basically ended it with one swing of the bat. Now, you didn't know that at the time because it occurred in the middle innings. But, again, he's the guy that I think is very meaningful with each and every at-bat or each and every hit. But today, you're right. It was a barrage offensively, and hey, some guys got into the fray as well. Now, we know about Norby's two hits, but Ryder Giles with two today. So some guys that have been getting their hit a game, or maybe even an 0-for-4 here and there, are jumping in on the action too, and that's good to see, especially when you see like guys like Giles with two. Agnos, he's done it a couple of times recently. And up and down the lineup. Francisco, I mentioned this earlier, 11-game hitting streak. That's been a little bit quiet, but at the same time, it's an 11-game hitting streak. He's to be credited for just that.
Coach, one thing I failed to mention earlier, I was going to ask your thoughts. Those of us like yourself, we love Keith LeClair with the Keith LeClair Classic this weekend. It's such a touching thing to see. For those of us that are fans, we have to, and announcers and people close to the program, seeing those 23s all net. Oh, man. Some of the announcers having trouble with seeing everybody with the same numbers. They're so used to having different numbers on the uniforms. But I know that it's a very special moment and just a great thing that ECU does for a great former coach.
Oh, well said, Dave, because you're right. It's hard to see the numbers. You have to see the number. There are small numbers on the sleeve. But for the cause, and especially for the man and the person, it didn't mind. It was almost like it was an honor to not be able to see the numbers, just to say it makes us think of Coach LeClair. And those players are playing for him just like his former players did. What the Keith LeClair Classic does, it honors a great man who is a great coach and well-deserved and just for all of ECU baseball. Big part, huge part of ECU baseball history is Keith LeClair.
Coach Joe, we talked to Audrey LeClair, his daughter, the other night, and talked about, you know, really in the grand scheme of things, Coach LeClair didn't coach that long. But when you look at his coaching tree, you look at his former players and his former assistants and where they are now, head coaches, or you know, a lot of players are assistant coaches, and head coaches at East Carolina and at Michigan, and you know, it's not like little jobs. I mean, it's remarkable the impact he had. I mean, his coaching tree is like he coached for 30 years.
Yeah, and not just a tree, but a very close tree. Each of those guys you just mentioned not only thought the world of Coach LeClair, they still talk about him. You mentioned the two guys, Bakic and Schnabel at Michigan, both wear the number 23 for games. And they had a close-knit group. They were close to him, but they were close to each other as well. And, all over the country. You mentioned Michigan, Coastal Carolina. How about this one, UCLA? We can go on and on. Their ties to many, many programs that were a big part of what Keith LeClair did here and at Western Carolina as well.
Something else, just about the week as a whole, not only today's game, but you noticed that bottom right column there under the E, air-free baseball for the entire week, Coach.
You know, interesting that we speak a lot, and I know as a former coach, I bring out a lot of the elements of play that I think are so important, like base running. You can't put a measure on really good base running, and this is one team that goes second to home and first to third as well as any that you'll see. They did that all weekend as well, but the crux of any real good club, if they're going to be good, has to start with defense. And this is the part of play that I think a lot of people, myself included, all of us, probably, I won't say overlooked, but we underestimated. We just assumed it was going to be a really good defensive club. And it has been. It's been really good. I tell you where I think a strength of this club is within the three skilled infield positions. Second base, shortstop, which is up the middle, but also Agnos at third base. When you look at those three positions, if you're looking for flash, I would say that you haven't seen, or you may not see it. You have, and I'll explain that in just a moment. But those three guys play as solid a baseball as you want to see. Range from Norby at second base is phenomenal. The play against Old Dominion after – this was after the home run was hit in the 12th inning that Ryder Giles made in the hole, deep in the hole, on an open backhand play and what we like to call a quick throw or a almost stationary throw with his arm strength across the diamond. That was a web gem that should have gone on anywhere. And then Agnos, who, when you talk about range, going to his right across the bag or across the line, he's like a vacuum cleaner, and especially on slow balls hit in, he makes every play. So all three of those guys, I think, a zero was up on the defensive ledger today, but those guys make that happen almost every day. I think in one game earlier in the year, Giles made an error, first ground ball of the game, and it was mentioned, you'll rarely see that. That is just something that doesn't happen. He doesn't make errors, and he makes plays look easier than they really are. So, no errors today, but those three guys on the infield defense are something that I think our fans should really focus on the remainder of the way, because it's a big part of why the Pirates are successful.
Coach, we look ahead Tuesday night.
Coach.
Might have some lag here with me and Dave. Tuesday night we go to Durham, take on Duke for the second game. I believe the only ACC team we play twice. Talk about our second matchup with the Blue Devils, if you will.
Yeah, Kyle, before I do, though, the Pirates do play UNC twice this year.
Oh, do we? Okay. I'm sorry. For some reason, I was thinking we only played them once this year. Okay.
No, that's okay. I think the first game was in Chapel Hill and the following week back in Greenville. And that's later in this month. But, yeah, a really good matchup. And that was a great game played back in Greenville just 2 weeks ago, or actually last week. Pirates played really well in that game. Three really good players for Duke, and three guys that have been around for quite a while and have actually played in two super regionals. So that shows you the experience and the quality of the clubs that Chris Pollard's putting together at Duke. Now, although the Pirates won at ECU just a week ago, played really, really well, but three players that they have that are very special. Seth Rothenberg, the catcher, who's been around a while. Ethan Murray, a very slick fielding shortstop. And maybe the best of the three, Joey Lippifito, who is the center fielder, had a couple of hits, a couple of extra base hits against ECU a week ago. And those guys kind of make Duke go. But the thing is, they've won a lot of games while those three guys have been in a Duke uniform. So that matchup, I think that matchup may just come down to pitching. Pirates right now have used more than a couple of guys starting midweek games. And I think they're searching to find that guy, who that would be for midweek action. So I think when it comes to the Duke-ECU matchup Tuesday, that game may very well come down to pitching, especially with good position players on both sides of the ledger.
And, Coach, Duke has a 6-5 record. Of course, they won Davidson the midweek game, and then they had the Boston College series. That's the thing that people don't understand with you have to be careful, and I tell people this all the time, don't look at somebody's record, because when you have the competition that's in the American, for example, and then the ACC, sometimes, especially in the ACC, we talked to Mike Rooney, and he was telling us there's, I forgot how many teams, but it's most of the whole conference is projected to make the regional.
Yeah, according to Rooney, the whole damn ACC is going to get in, so I guess we know how
to. You know, Mike Rooney's a great guy. You guys know that. You've interviewed him. And he made a prediction recently. Illinois State was going to Oklahoma State, and that was one of his predictions, that Illinois State would upset Oklahoma State in at least one of the games, and their opponent of ECU in about 2 weeks coming into Greenville. So that's a foe that the Pirates are going to have to keep their eye on. But yeah, Mike Rooney, D1 baseball now, but also has worked for ESPN for quite some time, and a great advocate of college baseball is he. But you're exactly right, Dave. You don't look at scores and you don't look at who beat who, because it doesn't matter. It's the two teams that are playing on the field. Boston College was expected to be pretty good. Yeah, they have beaten Duke. How about Pittsburgh with a 3-game sweep at Florida State? So things like that, you just have to sweep under the rug and see what two teams matching up are going to do. It's been a funny year already to this point. That's why I think the fact that the Pirates right now 9-2, and they've not had any stumbles, unless you want to call the Old Dominion game, and they're too good of a hitting club for that to be called a stumble.
Coach, that Duke series last time, the Duke game last time, I should say, in Greenville at Clark LeClaire, how about the performance of C.J. Mayhew? He oh my goodness, what a performance he had. And I know that was then, that as a coach, you don't want to look back, but he did such a great job for Pirate fans. Pirates won that game 6-1.
Yes. And we talked about Logish a little earlier, six hitters that he struck out in two innings. And again, I know I'm wearing this down, but the buzz that he created in the stands. Mayhew, the same thing. Maybe not quite that buzz, because the game was on the line at the time. The Pirates had not opened that game up when Mayhew came in. And he kept the game where it was, that allowed the Pirates to go from a 1-run lead to a 3-run lead, and so forth. But yeah, there was no question that he was the shining star in that moment. And he's a guy that we talked about Tuthill from Appalachian State being like him, but Tuthill not having the command. C.J. Mayhew has command, and C.J. Mayhew has a closer's or a reliever's mentality. He's very tough. He's very tough to hit, but he's also coming at you, and he likes it when it's one-on-one, and he feels like he's going to win those battles each time out.
Bubba, is that game, is the Duke game ESPN Plus or ACC Network?
I went to ECUPirates.com, and as of right now, all it was showing was 94.3 The Game, obviously locally, and then TuneIn Radio. I can't imagine that there would not be some video, but as of right now, it's not showing up.
Guys, I looked on both Go Duke and ECU Pirates, so both are not showing any kind of TV. I knew that question would be asked.
I can't imagine that's the case.
Well, it may be a late ad. I don't know. I tell you one thing, Coach. I absolutely love when you and Corey are on there on either ECUPirates.com, where we have the simulcast of you guys from the radio from 94.3 The Game, or, of course, on the ESPN Plus. That just is – it makes my job a lot easier. As most people know, I like to hear the radio broadcast with TV, and it doesn't always match up like it should.
Well, thank you for saying that, and we're – we're very, both of us are very pleased to do that. And working a game with Corey is a lot of fun. I can assure you that what we do is a pleasure and an honor. And if we can do it for any and all to hear, certainly, but especially for Pirate fans.
Coach, I have one more thing as we get close to closing this out. I wanted to look ahead a little bit. You know, we got a few more non-conference series, but as we get into conference play, we're not having midweek games. We're going to be playing four-game series. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think under the conditions we're in now, I think it's good. Because what it does, it allows teams to get in close to their maximum number of games, 56 games. Now, I'm not saying it is, but it should be. I'm not going to say an advantage, but it should be a plus for teams like ECU who have much pitching depth. Now that it doesn't always fall into that case, but with that being said, you have to win the game on the field. There's no question about that. But I personally like four game sets. I know most coaches today don't like doubleheaders, but at the same time, to get in four games in 3 days with no midweek games, and that's the key. There are no games once we start conference on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So all pitching should be fresh. And really like it. And I think fans should like it too. I think it's good for baseball, and it's a little different. So I think that's going to make it better for baseball.
Yeah, I think for East Carolina fans, we just feel like we're losing some of the midweek regional games. And not all of them, obviously. As you mentioned, we do get Carolina twice. We get Duke twice. But I think that's probably the complaint from a lot of Pirate fans.
Yeah, and there's no Campbells, no Elons, yeah. Only one game with Wilmington, and that's always a little special for both programs.
Yeah.
Coach, quick thoughts on for next weekend's series at home against Charlotte. I want to get your take on them, on the 49ers.
Well, first of all, Charlotte, an improved club. They have a couple of really good arms. Maybe not quality pitchers as of yet, but really good arms. So that's something to keep an eye on. But my understanding is their position players are better as well. So that's an improved club in every facet of play. And ECU is going to have to play to win. They will be, you asked me earlier about Appalachian. Was it more ECU or was it maybe Appalachian not being quite as good? And I think we alluded to the fact that ECU played well, and the quality of play was there, certainly this weekend. Now, next weekend, we'll have to play. There's no question. For us to beat Charlotte, any and all, ECU is going to have to play well.
Yeah, Coach O, during our Division I baseball preview for the state of North Carolina, I caught up with Robert Woodard, the second-year head coach of the 49ers, who obviously diehard college baseball fans and Pirate fans will remember for the excellent job he did not only as a pitcher but a coach for the Tar Heels. And just certainly I think he's the winningest pitcher in North Carolina history under Mike Fox. But, Coach Woodard brought in a ton of JUCO transfers, and – And so definitely check that out, Pirate fans. And we'll share that on our social media, that preseason interview. But the 49ers, they did go 1-3. They dropped 2 out of 3 to Western Carolina and then lost their midweek game 9-7 to Billy Godwin's UNCG Spartans. But they are off to a 7-3 start.
Yeah, and certainly a club that I think even later in the year, people will have to keep an eye on. I mean, they were I'm not sure where they were picked in Conference USA, but I do know that the people like D1 Baseball, again, Mike Rooney and Aaron Fitt and those guys, they felt like within the league that UNC Charlotte was going to be really good.
All right, well, Coach, thank you so much for coming on. I know we kept you probably longer than we should have, but thank you so much for everything. We enjoy you very much and look forward to having you back on this season. And it's great to – I tell you one thing before we let you go, one final thing. It's so great to have you and Corey. For one respect is that we missed a lot of that season last year, cut so short. It's so great to have you all back.
You're right. When it was cut short, I think it really – affected a lot of people, and we were very disappointed as well. But guys, all of you guys are East Carolina people, and that's very special to us too. And it's always a pleasure to talk baseball with you, and I think we could talk even further if we wanted to.
No doubt, Coach. Thank you so much, and look forward to the broadcast on Tuesday night.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it very much. Well, that's Dr. Gary Overton. Of course, Coach Overton, as Coach O has been generous to be on with us tonight. Guys, I know, Bubba, you wanted to talk some scores around the league with American.
Let's take a look at the American scoreboard. And UCF, obviously last weekend, it was well documented what they did going to Oxford and winning 2 out of 3 against number 1 Ole Miss. And this week, they're 0-4. They went 0-4. Wow. They did lose 3 one-run ball games, and they played very solid competition in Stetson and then 3 games against Liberty. But, UCF is now 3-8 after going 0-4 this week.
Wow.
The Houston Cougars, 7-4 now. They dropped 2 out of 3 this weekend to 19th-ranked Texas. That series is actually played in Houston, and they split – one-run games in the first 2 games, and I think fell 8-2 today. I was hoping maybe they could get another huge series win for the conference. USF is 7-3 since getting swept by Florida Gulf Coast in the opening weekend series. The Bulls have won all 7 and swept the Stetson Hatters this weekend. You had Memphis going 0-5 this week. They were hammered by Ole Miss 16-4 during the midweek and then dropped all 4 games out at Baylor. This weekend, wow. Losing 2 close games in games 1-4 and games 2-3, they really gave up a ton of runs. I think lost one of those games, something like 20-4. Wichita State is now 6-3. The Shockers had a 4-0 week. They picked up a solid 3-0 win over Oral Roberts, who's always solid ball club. You've seen them make the super regionals in recent years. And then this weekend, they swept Dixie State. Dixie State, a lot of folks probably don't realize this, but they are in the WAC. The WAC has obviously really, really changed shape in recent years. But Wichita State, after beating Dixie State 2-1 on Friday, won 15-3 and 15-7 in the final 2 games of that series. Cincinnati and UNC Wilmington split a pair of games. The Bearcats are now 3-7. And that, of course, was played down at Brooks Field. And then Tulane is now 5-6. After a 2-2 week, they lost to Southeastern Louisiana during the midweek and then took 2 out of 3 from Conference USA foe Western Kentucky this weekend, losing game 3 today by just a single run as they attempted the sweep.
All right, that's a look at our scoreboard around the league. And, again, we'll talk about Next Level. And just a little bit, nextleveltc.com, Training Civil, that's Training Center, that's their website. They call them at 756-NEXT if you have any training needs for your son or daughter, for sure, and we appreciate them. I'll tell you what, Kyle, very excited today with Alexander. He had a chance to go to the clinic they had. I wanted to give a shout-out to Trent, Brett, his wife Gaynell Britt, and all the great instructors, including I believe that Bryant Packer was there, former Pirate, and Alec Burleson, both that are professional ball now. But two of the many great coaches there, and they treated Alexander like a prince. He learned a lot today. And so if you have any needs there for next level, make sure you go to, again, check him out, nextleveltc.com and 252-756-NEXT. They also have an outstanding Facebook page. They are very active on their Facebook page and have all kinds of great content. They had the Pitt County softball tryouts for the girls yesterday, I know, there. So make sure that you check out their stuff there. Appreciate all the support of the as our title sponsor for Extra Innings.
Absolutely.
What's that?
I said absolutely.
What a great sponsor for to have, and appreciate Trent. I mean, I didn't realize he was a former scout for the Dodgers. So a lot of great stuff there. He's got a resume to die for when it comes to the baseball community. So make sure that you go that. All right. So on Friday we had a chance to sit down, right, Bubba, with one of our favorite guests, and he was generous to come back on.
Oh, we should have taken this at the beginning of the show, guys.
You and Kyle had the opportunity to sit down with John Gilbert, and now let's go ahead and go to that interview with East Carolina Director of Athletics, John Gilbert.
This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to the Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Well, we're very excited to have our next guest, one of our favorites. He's always been very good to us, been carving out some time in his busy schedule. And back with us now is the Director of Athletics for East Carolina University, John Gilbert. John, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me on.
Certainly. I sometimes wonder about you and Ryan, if you'll go with all the problems at East Carolina, should we have stayed where we were, then come here. But we're so glad to have you at East Carolina in Greenville. And thank you for one of the most difficult times in the history, I'm sure, of our athletic department. We wanted to have you on. Obviously, lots of going on, and we can talk about COVID, but there's so many good things we want to talk about, John. And one of the things we're very excited about is being our show is Extra Innings we have on right now. We had the Clark LeClair Classic this weekend. Very happy to have fans back in the stands for baseball, and I know you are too.
Well, you know, first I want to say I think East Carolina is a great institution. Katie and I love living here in town. It's a special community, and I'm just really excited to be the athletic director here. I do think we have gone through an extremely difficult year. For everyone, for our student athletes, our coaches, our staff, our fan base, you know, our community, the local businesses that, you know, rely on East Carolina and the athletic department. So I'm excited that, you know, this past weekend with the Keith LeClair and the Appalachian State Series that fans are allowed to come back and, you know, experience something as close to normal.
Yeah, no doubt, John. As we recording this on Friday morning, guys who are listening on Sunday, so the series has not happened yet as we are recording. So, John, what's it going to be like for you to see, you know, as you mentioned, things back not to normal, but close to normal. It's been in a while. Big 1,200 fans in the stands at Clark LeClair this weekend. I mean, it's I would imagine the administration has got to be excited, but those baseball players have got to be really fired up to go out there and see some fans in the stands.
Well, it does make a difference. You know, last night we had a difficult loss to Central Florida, and it was the first time we really could have people back in Minji's. And though it was a limited number, you know, I think we're in the 800 to 900 range. You know, it was the first time all year in basketball, both basketballs, we had our concession stands open. And it's just weird to say that. And so I'm excited for our student athletes that, you know, can finally look up in the stands and see people there. And obviously our fan base brings a lot of energy to our game atmosphere. So I'm excited about that.
John, on March 1st, football tickets went on sale. how's that going? I know there was some carryover last year. Several people pushed their season tickets to this year instead of getting a refund. Do you know about how many people actually did that in terms of carrying over last year's season ticket money to this year? And then how many additional tickets have we sold so far for week one?
You know, I don't know the exact total, you know, as of today, but I do know we had a couple thousand people that rolled over from last year. You know, individuals, if they make their purchase by March the 15th, then obviously they can get a 6-month payment plan, which I think, you know, our fan base has, you know, really been looking forward to having that payment plan. And so, you know, football season tickets is our, you know, driving force for the financial stability of this athletic department. And so really important to make sure that we do the best that we can and get our fan base to invest in buying season tickets for football.
And to follow up on the season tickets, John, right now we're at 30% capacity. You hope and anticipate we're at 100% capacity by football season, but just a hypothetical, let's say we sold 15,000 season tickets. If we were at 50% capacity, I'm assuming we would be able to accommodate those 15,000 season tickets.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really don't think we're going to have capacity restrictions by the fall. Now, I do think, you know, we could still have some COVID protocols in place, but I think we are proceeding like we're going to be back to normal capacity, and we will accommodate everyone that has purchased a season ticket. You know, if you look at our schedule, and we open with, you know, Appalachian State on the road in Charlotte, and then the next week we come back home against South Carolina. It's going to be a really big opener for us, and I am expecting a full stadium.
That's very exciting, John. With the schedule is fantastic this year, and we're obviously excited what Coach Houston and the staff are doing. And how, as far as the capacity, is that going to be the full capacity at Bank of America? I would think if it's full capacity, 73,000 in September for Labor Day weekend.
Yes, like, you know, we're selling tickets, you know, as we normally would. And so my anticipation is that it's going to be open for, you know, full capacity.
Talking about capacity and talking about baseball for a moment, 30%, I'm pretty sure I read this correctly. I believe it was the letter from one of your letters from Naomi, or I read it somewhere. The baseball season ticket allotment is based on Power Club priority points, and you are allowed to purchase the amount of tickets you purchased in the previous year based on your priority. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if Dave qualified and he purchased 4 tickets, he could purchase 4 this year. But if he purchased 1, he would only be able to purchase 1 again this year.
Correct. Now, it is, you know, very abnormal what we're doing right now. And I'll use baseball because that's the one that we're selling tickets to. Is, you know, our outdoor capacity is right around 30%. But you also have to put social distancing protocols in place. And so we're doing the best that we can to get the most people into the venue, but you may not be able to sit in your exact seat that you normally sit in. And you can't go from the jungle to the main part of the stadium or the main part of stadium out to the jungle. You know, there's just still some protocols in place. And if you look at what we do in athletics, you know, we always want to get the most people in our venue that we can get. And right now we're being told, you know, you have to limit. So it's abnormal and an inconvenience for everyone involved. It's an inconvenience for us, and it's an inconvenience for our fan base, but we're going to do the best we can to get the most people involved.
And John, my prediction this year is I really believe we're going to be hosting our first ever Super Regional. Love what Cliff's doing there. And my hope is that we can, by the time we have a regional in May, that we could have full capacity or way closer to than what we have now.
You know, I'm really just focusing on, you know, trying to win the game tonight. I'm not looking that far ahead. Is that a good Cliff Godwin impersonation?
Yes. Yeah, I'm about to play Cliff Godwin.
Yeah. I think if you look at, you know, the success of our baseball program, you really do have to do one game at a time because it is such a long season. But obviously we've got a rich tradition and high expectations with the program. So I know our coaches and staff are working hard to compete.
John, obviously, you know, COVID-19. We appear to be, you know, as we've talked about, maybe on the backside of it. What's the situation with the vaccines and the student athletes and the coaches? Do you anticipate that being available to the student athletes here in the next month or so? Or and what is the protocol? Is that going to be left up to each individual student athlete?
I've been talking to you know, multiple individuals in the health community and our team doctor and Mike Hanley, who've done a remarkable job of coordinating COVID for us. And I can't stress enough how far ahead East Carolina is as an institution as we deal with COVID, the testing and the protocols. You know, I got tested early this morning, kind of a routine test, and I should have my results back by, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock tonight, which is far better than what our peers are experiencing, where they're having to ship it off to labs and do different things. So I'm very fortunate, you know, as an institution to have what we have. The vaccine itself, I'm told that, you know, sometime late March, early April, we should have it available to our coaches, staff, and our teams. And it will be up to the individuals to determine whether they want to get it or not.
John, also, as we look towards April, means spring football. And, you know, I'm assuming, you know, with spring football typically, 30% capacity, you know, it would be a good crowd for spring football. So it shouldn't be a big problem there with having to limit fans. I'm anticipating we're gonna have a spring football game as usual. Are we gonna do any of the activities surrounding it, or will it just be a spring game?
Right now, we're anticipating playing the spring game on April 17th at 1 o'clock. We do anticipating having fans, so whatever the capacity restrictions are at that time, we'll adhere to those. And get as many people in as possible. We will not be doing a, you know, pigskin pig out type weekend. You know, we're going to hold on that for the time being. But we definitely are going to have a game.
Yeah, and I would imagine, you know, people are going to be just excited to get in Daddy Picklin. Not very many people got to go last year, so whatever the attendance limitation is, it could be a good crowd for the spring game this year.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, people are starting to get hungry to get back to, you know, in-person events. And so I think we'll definitely be trending upwards in that regard.
John, obviously, the university, the athletic department had some financial issues prior to COVID. COVID exacerbated it, it's even worse now. Beyond buying football season tickets, you know, in just your annual fund for the park club, what can the fans do to kind of help with the athletic department financially?
Well, really, it starts with our Pirate Club. That is the annual fund. You can join for as low as $100 a year. And that really helps us fund the scholarship piece for our student athletes. And so it starts with the Pirate Club annual fund. Obviously, we've got season tickets for, you know, football and our other sports programs. You know, just investing in inviting our fan base to come be a part of it. That's really an important message that, you know, we're sending. We want people to come be a part of it, you know, come and get to know our student athletes, our coaches, and our staff. But we really do need this community and people affiliated with East Carolina to join the Pirate Club and be a part of it.
And John, the We Believe campaign, I know we had Ryan on Tuesday night on the show. I know that that's close to $1 million. Is that something that you guys will contemplate on keeping a fund like that for those of us that have a little extra money? I mean, it's tax season, so people are getting tax refunds, maybe give 100 here, 50 there, or bigger amounts. Is that something that we could count on in the future?
Well, I think really the drive for us is going to be joining the Pirate Club and what okay. we can do to refresh the Pirate Club. The We Believe was kind of a one-off campaign because,
right.
you know, so many people couldn't come to our games, and so our Pirate Club memberships were down. The We Believe was a way to, you know, help stabilize that. And so I'm hopeful that we can focus our priority on the Pirate Club annual fund.
Hey, Ryan, you mentioned the Pirate Club and the annual fund and getting membership up. Ryan has been wearing many hats and have been acting as the executive director of the Pirate Club for a while now. How close are we to hiring a permanent executive director of the Pirate Club?
Well, I we're starting to fill some positions. If you look overall in the department, we've been without a significant a number of positions. I think at the most we got to, you know, 15 to 18 positions. And it wasn't because those positions weren't needed. It was because we weren't bringing in enough revenue to fund them. But we're at a point where, you know, we've got to start filling some jobs in the ticket office, in the Pirate Club. And so I think you'll see some Pirate Club announcements here in the coming weeks. And then obviously I want to finalize the executive director position. Ryan has done a remarkable job kind of stabilizing that unit and really forming a link of communication with our other operating units where everybody knows what's going on with the other operating units. Ryan's done an exceptional job in that regard.
And John, can I nominate someone? Can I nominate Kyle to be the executive director of the Pirate Club?
Don't want that.
you can nominate him. We'll be happy to take a nomination. I'm not sure it'll be a final, you'll get the final check, but you certainly can nominate him.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw my candidacy for that position, John, but I'm going to do the thing that head coaches do when they know they're not going to get the job. I am no longer a candidate for that position.
Yeah.
One more question for me, John. With everybody's favorite question, it was two part though. One's been related. Any new news with future football schedules? Or are we pretty much all set for the time being? As, you know, I know there's some open dates further down the line. Any news there? You know, everybody loves to talk about the in-state ACC opponents, but just any news in general. And do we have a rescheduled date for Marshall coming to Greenville?
You know, we are the South Carolina game that we missed this year due to COVID. You know, I think we're going to push somewhere in the 27-28 range, somewhere in there. I think that game will move to 2027, and then really. I'm looking at our schedule now. The next opening we have now is 2028, and we really need a FCS game in that year. And so unless something drops, like there's some sort of scheduling issue, our schedule really is intact for the next little while. But, you know, if you look at 2022, you know, we've got NC State back on the schedule. 23, we're at Michigan. 24, we got BYU at home. 25, we're at NC State. 26, we've got Boise, West Virginia, and App. Boise's on the road. 27, we've got South Carolina, Wake at home, and then 28 back to NC State at home and Wake on the road. So we've got a really healthy schedule for the next several years. I don't anticipate anything shifting unless something happens at another institution.
Okay, so I was hoping we get that Marshall game back, but unfortunately didn't get to be played.
Well, the Marshall game will come back, but we're probably not going to get it back until like 28, 29, 30, somewhere in there.
Okay.
I mean, there are just no openings. Like,
right.
Now we get Marshall at home in 23, and then we're back at their place in 25. Now, those are all previously scheduled games, but the game we missed, we are not getting back until late in the 2000s.
You can make it for 2030, and then we'll be will that be the 60th anniversary of the crash?
Yeah.
That's right.
That's not a bad idea.
John, as far as UNC, have you heard anything? Is there anything there? I know it will be late in the decade. Because of just what you're talking about, that or maybe a Duke on the schedule?
You know, we've talked to some other regional teams. The schedules just quite haven't lined up. You know, obviously we've got NC State for a while. We've got South Carolina. We've got Wake Forest. But I think, you know, the last time I looked, both Carolina was, you know, their schedule's relatively full for a while. So we'll continue to have conversations with them. But obviously, you know, both parties have to be interested in playing.
Yeah. It took legislation at one point to make that happen. So who knows? And John, one more thing for me. I don't know what else Deck got, but we'll let you go here soon. You mentioned back, particularly at the start of this COVID, and I think it's something you might have thought about before then, about non-revenue sports forming a regional conference. Is that something that you're having conversations with other institutions about? And do you see that happening in the future?
You know, I could. We're not having any conversations about a regional conference for our Olympic sports. I do think that at some point there is going to be a break between the higher resource schools. And I think when that happens, you could see a shift to some more regional scheduling with our Olympic sports teams. You know, at the end of the day, football drives the revenue and drives the exposure. And I do think it's worthwhile to look at, you know, keeping that from a conference and television standpoint, from a revenue distribution. But I do think, you know, a regional schedule for all our other, or a regional league for all our other teams makes a lot of sense.
All right, John, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it as always. And you've been very transparent with us since day one of coming on and talking to us. And looking forward to a lot of success with all our now fall sports playing in the spring, and obviously our spring sports as well, and hope to have you on back again real soon.
Yep, look forward to being back on. Appreciate you guys, and go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Chica.
All right.
Udon with the run in there.
Yeah, Udon is making a cameo here tonight. Appreciate John Gilbert, Director of Athletics, guys. A great sit down with him. And on Friday morning, we appreciate him very much coming on. Thank you, Kyle, as always, for with me on that interview.
Yeah, I thought it was a good interview. I thought he had some good information there. One thing he forgot to mention with the upcoming scheduling was a 20 game series with Old Dominion. Forgot about that.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm very excited about our football program, and of course. I believe it's April the 17th is our spring game. Is that right, Bubba? My memory. It's right after my birthday, so I remember that.
Yeah,
April
17th. Right.
He said it during the interview.
Yeah.
It was the 7th or the 17th, one or the other.
17th.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's 17th, 1 p.m. It's typically 2, but it's 1 this year.
Yeah, 1 this year. No pig out, so go to Bees or Parker's or Moore's or Sam Jones for your barbecue beforehand.
No doubt. Want to thank again, guys, and Next Level Training Center. Want to thank them for being our title sponsor. And again, fantastic job today, earlier this Sunday morning, 10:30 to 1. They had a lot of instructors, very organized. It's such a great facility. Kyle, I don't know if you've been there, but you, hey, you get, if you get a chance, you can do some batting practice. Yeah. And you can get your work in there, Kyle. It's a lot of fun. I got a chance to spend there last. In fact, COVID is the only reason why we haven't been back sooner. And now things are obviously getting better. And they do a great job with social distancing and, of course, all the safety protocols. They've been working with the governor's office, Trent and Gaynell, and all them are fantastic. They're at Next Level. In fact, you can go to nextleveltc.com. Give them a call, 252-756-NEXT. And check them out. Like their Facebook page. They are fantastic with daily information about recruits for East Carolina signing. And, of course, all the other schools that are getting our local talent in the Greenville-Pitt County area. And appreciate them very much. Also want to give a shout-out to Mark Minakazi at pgxgloves.com for his support of the program. Of course, he did it for the 23 Jungle Tales. Also, now he's doing the PGX Player of the Week and the PGX Pitcher of the Week, and we couldn't do it without Kaz. So thank you very much, Kaz, for all that you've done for the show. And, guys, do you have anything before we go?
Yeah.
Go ahead, David, Bubba.
We had a few other scores and just some okay. interesting things from around college baseball. South Carolina, they've struggled in recent years. I think they were off to a good start last year, but the last few full seasons that were played, the Gamecocks have struggled. But Gamecocks are off to a 10-0 start, and they swept Mercer over the weekend. Then you also had NC State and Wolfpack have struggled here early. And they did win their first two games this week, beating Campbell 14-6 and Miami 11-5. But then they dropped the last two by 6-4 scores to the Hurricanes at Doak Field in Raleigh this weekend. UNC Tar Heels are 7-3. They dropped 2 out of 3 up in Blacksburg to Virginia Tech. Oral Roberts talked about Wichita State getting a 3-0 victory over Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts went to Baton Rouge this weekend and took 2 out of 3 from 11th ranked LSU, winning 22-7 and 3-1 in games 1 and 3. And they did get blown out themselves in Saturday's game, 12-0. Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons are currently battling COVID. They had a game canceled with Western Carolina. They had to postpone this weekend's 3-game set with BC, and then also this week's midweek game, this coming week, that is, against Elon. So Demon Deacons will hopefully get back into action this coming weekend.
Get your shots. Get your shots. Our great athletes are getting shots now at the vaccination clinic, by the way, guys. I found out today. So get your shots. That's what
I had 6 shots last night, Dave.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the vaccination.
Oh, okay.
And then you also had Link Jarrett and Notre Dame went to Clemson and took 2 out of 3.
Guy, I got some interesting sports news. If you haven't seen the end of the Houston-Memphis game, go online, find it, do yourself a favor. Half court three-pointer in the last second of the game for Houston to close out the regular season of the American Athletic Conference with a dramatic win. Awesome to see that. Anytime you can see this half court shots, it's fun to watch. And then for all you Washington football team fans out there, no more cheerleaders for the Washington football team. They will have a co-ed dance team going forward to match their new logo of nothingness.
I got nothing on that. I'll keep my opinions to myself on that one, but certainly.
Go football team, go.
Go my favorite football team.
Absolutely.
All right. Are you guys ready to put this podcast to bed?
It's going to go to Sleepy Land.
Sleepy All Land. Right.
Well, thanks to our great guest, of course, this evening, Dr. Gary Overton, who Coach O did a great job breaking down the games and give us some previews for Duke and Charlotte this week. Of course, we have the road game with Duke at DBAP. And then we'll be back home with a series with Charlotte this weekend. And hopefully we get fans out there to Clark LeClaire. Make sure if you have tickets, please use them. Or
hey, one more thing, Dave.
He'll go there.
One more thing, Dave. We had a grad transfer picked up from the not a grad transfer, but a pickup from the transfer portal for football, offensive lineman from Oregon State. So anytime I know he's a little undersized, but anytime you can get a Power Five offensive lineman out of the transfer portal, that's good because those are normally highly sought after.
No doubt, very excited about that. And again, looking for a huge season in 21 as we open up in, speaking of Charlotte, at Bank of America Stadium as we take on, we'll get some Duke's mayonnaise there, taking on Appalachian State coming up in September. That's the Labor Day weekend, that Thursday night. It's going to be fantastic. Cannot wait. Also, not only Coach O, we will appreciate him and also Director of Athletics for East Carolina, John Gilbert. For Kyle Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond. You've been watching and listening. Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!